Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to part 2 of this week's Clash of the Titles Fanuary, the podcast that this January pits 2 movies with something in common picked by fans of the show and puts them in a fight to the death to see which one comes out victorious. On Monday's episode, we had a hull of an escape from the Poseidon, which means today we're saying flame on as we scale the dizzying heights of 1974's The Towering Inferno.
You're looking for me, Chief?
If you're Duncan, yeah.
I am. Everything under control?
Got to move all these people out of here.
Oh, now, just how bad is it?
It's a fire, mister, and all fires are bad.
Well, I don't believe that you're familiar with the many modern safety systems we have designed into this building. We've got them all.
All right, it's your building, but it's our fire. Now, let's get these people the hell out of here. Now,
I don't think you're listening, Chief. There's no way for a fire on 81 to reach up here, not in this building.
So which film will be delightfully disastrous and which will be a downright disaster? We'll have a winner at the end of the show, so let's get it on. Welcome to Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken!
Hello, Clash Putters. You make love to a girl and afterwards, there's no physical evidence to mark the occasion. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
I'm Chris Tilly.
So part 2 of our third Clash of the Titles, Fanuary, and the disaster duel that is Poseidon Adventure versus Towering Inferno. As you well know, one film will be declared the winner in the verdict at the end of this show. So remind us, Chris, who are we thanking for this pairing?
Big thank you to Craig Mayne, whose favourite film of all time is the Poseidon Adventure. So a lot riding on today's verdict for Craig.
A lot. And he's a new listener as well, so we want to welcome him to the Clashpod family. But that is not going to influence our verdicts. We're professionals in that respect and only that respect.
Yeah.
Sure. So, there is still time to get your own pairing in. If you have a suggestion for us, you have to tell us why you want the suggestion. Email us to show at clash... What is it again, Chris?
No,
you do
one
this
knows.
Bit.
It's showatclashpod.com.
Sure.
We've been doing this for years now.
I thought it was .org, because I think we're a charity.
I thought it was .net. But there you go. It's showatclashpod.com, and there is still space this February, Fanny. Right, any other business before we get into this?
No?
All right, great stuff. On Monday, we got wet and wild with the Poseidon Adventure, which means today it's time to turn up the heat with the Towering Inferno. V, take us on a journey.
Take the world's finest actors and have them talk about building regs in a huge phallus for nearly 3 hours, and that's the Towering Inferno. Also, the world's finest actors are squabbling children, which is how you get both Paul Newman and Steve McQueen, who personally I already think are indistinguishable, as both the good guy and both the hero, because neither of them wants to be the villain that sets their own massive penis on fire. Which means, is the villain evil son-in-law Roger, who cut corners in the wiring leading to a fire? But Roger's wife doesn't love him, and his father-in-law put the squeeze on him to save money, so he can't be the bad guy. Maybe the bad guy is the father-in-law, build a gym. But as he repeatedly states, he stuck to code, which sounds entirely fair and legal. So the villain must be the fire, which sounds right, actually, because the real reason I'm being snarky about the Oscar-winning, highest-grossing film of 1974 is because it gave me actual nightmares when I was little, and I wouldn't let my mum put the tumble dryer on for about 4 months, which really pissed her off. So there's a lot of buried stuff here for me when I'm watching The Tower Inferno, where supporting characters are punished for being in love or being nice to children. Thank God the two good guys get out alive, and good guy's girlfriend Faye Dunaway, who's got an enviable future ahead of her in the middle of a McQueen-Newman three-way, which is the logical conclusion to their one-upmanship. Lucky old Faye.
They'd argue about who goes first, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they would.
Well, I think I'd rather... Faye, shut up. The men are talking. So,
just stay still.
Scissors, paper, stone.
So, as I have inferred, I saw this on the telly at my grandma's house. But, oh God, what's he called? Bigelow. Robert Wagner, something Bigelow. The PR guy.
Dan Bigelow.
Dan Bigelow. Thank you. Because I just remember his watch. That's the bit I saw. And I just was, it was just the worst thing. And then, I know everyone, fire is fucking scary, but I was only very little and I was so frightened. Mm. And I was so frightened that, like, I was that little that we used to all play out on the street and there'd be like a little gang of kids and we used to knock around together. And just by dint of living on the same street, we weren't really friends. And there was a boy that used to like tease me a lot about being scared. And he'd say, I'm going to come and set your house on fire, because he knew that that was my thing. And I would run off crying to my mum. Like, it was really bad.
That's everyone's thing. Someone saying, I'm going to set your house on fire is not exclusive to you.
That's true. So then I just really zeroed in on the tumble dryer and I wouldn't let, I remember screaming and screaming when I was in bed. That's how little I was, that I was in bed when she was doing chores or whatever. I can't even say it. It was so awful. And I would scream at her to turn it off and she'd eventually comply. But obviously, a lot of simmering resentment there because she's got to get shit done. She's got a screaming child and it's all because of this film.
And all your clothes smelt fusty.
Yeah, they would have smelled. I mean, I don't know what she's using a tumble dryer for, to be perfectly honest with you. We had a back garden, we had a washing line, but maybe she was short of time. I don't know.
Sure.
I haven't got a tumble dryer, I have to say. And part of it is because I'm scared of them. And also, we don't have the space, but I am quite scared of tumble dryers because of the Towering Inferno. Does that make sense?
That makes perfect sense. I'm getting it. Hates tumble dryers, scared of the Towering Inferno. Got it. 100%. I'm on board.
Those two are clearly in a line.
Yeah.
When did you see it? Is it the same thing?
No. It was one of those movies that I remembered sort of being on for an entire afternoon when I was a kid.
It's so long.
It was like, I think it must have been on ITV because with breaks, you're looking at 5 hours. And I just kept coming in and out of this room where people were watching it and going, all right, so this is kind of like a first watch, but I didn't see the scene that you mentioned, the Dan Bigelow and his secretary scene, because that is both fantastic and utterly harrowing.
Yeah, the trouble with watching it for this podcast is you can't dip out. When you're a kid watching this, you could dip in and out, but we haven't got any choice.
Yeah. Get a snack, come back. You need energy for the second half of this movie.
What about you?
As I said on Monday, watched these when I was a kid, like we all did, when they were on telly. It was quite nice, though. This rewatch, I did watch over Christmas with my parents, as it should be watched.
Yeah, of course. makes you say that?
I think they slept through quite a lot of it.
All right, so I'll tell you a bit about it. It's adapted from not one, but two books. What?
Two books.
What? Yeah. Say what?
Are you allowed to do that? Just smush them together.
Yeah, he did. What's he called? Sterling Siliphant did just smush them together. So the books are The Tower and The Glass Inferno. They are very similar. It's a tall building. I've just pulled out the similar things. Tall building, shonky wiring, survivors being saved from up high. So in April 73, Warner Brothers buy The Tower and I did the maths and it was $350,000, which is about $2.5 million today. There had been a bidding war for it. And Fox was part of that bidding war. 8 weeks later, Fox have got The Glass Inferno, which they bought for $400,000. So anyway, so Irwin Allen, he was worried that the films would kind of cancel each other out. So he convinced them to team up, the story goes. He'll produce. He also directed the action stuff in The Towering Inferno.
Yeah, what is that?
I don't know. And do you know what?
We call it second unit now.
But okay. He gets a big credit.
It feels like that. Because like a second unit director doesn't get mentioned at the start of a movie. And no. It certainly doesn't go action. You know, the exciting bits. Irwin Allen directed those.
By this time, he is the master of disaster. So,
But if you're the actual, I should have done this. If you're the actual director, John Gilliman, how do you feel about, John, I'll do the cool shit. You can just do the building reg stuff, I guess.
He was furious, wasn't he? He was, he basically said, Alan got most of the critical kudos, which annoyed me. I wanted to fight it because, damn it, I made that picture.
Yeah.
But the studio talked me out of it. They said it would only hurt business, but I was wrong. I should have fought.
I should have fought.
That's what he says.
If you're interested in this, which I kind of am, the way that the studio split it, Fox gets domestic, Warner gets international. Interesting.
Yeah, I read that as well, and I was like, someone somewhere at the studios must have done the maths and gone, that's about 50-50.
But it never is. Not normal.
No. I guess it didn't used to be.
It didn't used to be. America used to be a lot more than international.
Mm. Yeah.
And now international is more than America.
Because China.
Yeah, because China.
Because China.
Because China.
Yeah.
If your film gets released in China, which most of the Marvel films don't get released in China.
Right.
Because they have progressive gay couples and things like that. And so China does not allow those films in, but they've allowed Avatar in, and they've actually extended Avatar's release this week.
So have they really?
James making a lot of money.
Yeah. I remember the Paul... Oh my gosh, director of Bridesmaids. Vicky?
Feig.
Paul Feig. Ghostbusters. His Ghostbusters. They wanted to release that in China, and they went like, no. We can't do this because it's got spirits in it.
Oh.
Things about the afterlife aren't really allowed in China.
So people in China have never seen original Ghostbusters?
Good question. Oh, don't know.
My God.
Yeah. You should
say,
get out there.
They love it.
Get out there with a sandwich board on the street and some,
do you realise?
Some dodgy DVDs.
They love a ghost story in China, though. So I wonder if that was a way of stopping a film about four women, one of whom might be gay, from playing in their country.
I wonder.
So now, Chris Tilley, you have spoken about this before.
I have. What's coming here? I'm obsessed with it.
I've listened to what you've said before.
Yeah.
And I've never took the time to look at the actual
poster.
Yeah,
it's fascinating.
So,
yeah.
You fill in the more detail. But basically, there's a huge fight for who's going to be credited or top billing. Like, who's going to get credited first? Who's going to get...
Three people were going for it. One immediately got dropped.
Yeah. So they say to the old guy, absolutely not.
Yes. Bill Holden, your star has
waned.
Yeah, yes.
Literally, they say you're not big enough to be in this fight.
But it's good that someone was like, guys, just for fuck's sake, like, just tell it how it is. No, you used to be and now you're not. Yeah. Deal with it. But with Paul Newman and Steve McQueen, it's just not working. And so you end up... When I've heard you, Chris, talk about it before, you're like, oh, so they did this thing and it's diagonal. And so if you're reading it this way, you're reading it whatever. And I thought, oh, that sounds... It sounds ridiculous. Mm. But as an ex-agent, I am nervous of a precedent affecting someone's career. So I kind of get it. And then I saw the poster and it looks fucking stupid. And it looks like babies that can't fucking sort their shit out. And it's hard to read. You're like, what?
Yeah.
And it's even worse when it's on screen and the helicopter's flying across. It's so stupid.
Yeah.
It offends me.
I think the first time I saw it, and I've said this before, it's Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin. And they made a film called Boeing Boeing, and they put the names on the propellers, so they were sort of going at angles diagonally. Weird thing is, I'm watching a TV series this week, a new TV series. They've done it there.
Really?
We Crashed.
Oh, what?
Jared Leto, Anne Hathaway.
Oh, the WeWork thing.
Yeah, and I guess they're thinking, well, these guys are pretty much level. I mean, I would think Anne Hathaway's maybe bigger, but I can see why they would consider them level pegging. And so they've done the same thing with their credits at the end.
God.
Still happening.
It just looks like, I know that this is a very like rose-tinted view of things, but it's meant to be, you know, it's meant to be a piece of art or whatever, and it's not for you, it's for the public. And you're squabbling over stuff that no one else cares about.
And the public needs to know who the biggest star is, though.
Do you think so?
Oh, honestly, but I think things like this matter. People, you know, I mean, I don't know whether they do anymore because I don't know that there was quite so much conversation about film as there is now on social media. But I think, you know, if it happened now, people are like, oh, so they're not as big as so-and-so.
I think the agents worry about it more than the general public do. And I wonder how much of this was the agents and how much was the actors. Certainly, if you read the stuff that's been said since about this situation, I get the sense it was more Steve McQueen and Paul Newman's agent.
Yeah.
And Paul Newman's quite regretful about some of the stuff that happened on this film between the two of them, because it is ridiculous and it's like children. He wanted to be a serious actor and he did this movie for money and then felt like he'd fucked up, basically.
Yeah.
I remember there's a story where Ben Stiller once asked Paul Newman his memories of the Tower Inferno, and he was like, money job, walked off. That's not true. Paul Newman's a nice guy.
I did also read that in order...
His salad dressing's gorgeous.
But you know what? I'm so glad you mentioned the salad dressing. Mm. I genuinely find it hard to tell them apart. Not in this film, just in life.
You mean his salad dressing and Steve McQueen's?
Steve McQueen hasn't got a salad dressing, has he?
No, he's got
a
ketchup.
Pickle. Close.
You were miles ahead of him, by the way. But, you know, who is it? You've got the face blindness thing with two actors. And we were laughing at it.
McDermott Maroney and Dylan McDermott.
Yeah.
It's a name thing as well.
But you did a quiz. You're like, who's been in this film? And we were like, oh, we actually now don't know. Like, they've become so blurred. Because also with Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, I'm hesitating. The one that's not in it was going to be in it.
Yeah. Steve McQueen.
Steve McQueen was going to be in it, and he's not in it.
Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Yeah,
he was going to play the Sundance Kid.
And then they were going to have the issue there. Mm. They didn't know who was going to get top billing. Yeah. But when McQueen dropped out and Paul Newman comes in, well, Robert Redford's more famous than Paul Newman, and so, or was it the other way around?
No, it's the other way around.
Paul Newman's more famous than Robert Redford.
Yeah.
Yes, that
and
was
if
it
wasn't for the salad dressing, which my dad was a big fan of, I actually would struggle to really tell them apart in this film.
Really?
Yeah, it's just handsome white dude.
I guess because I've grown up with my mum obsessing over Paul Newman, I just know his face is sort of embedded in my brain. Yeah.
And the fact they look very different as well.
Pretty men in slightly different ways.
Yeah, they probably
and one's got quite a prominent mole.
And now that I've watched
one
3 hours of
one spends most of the movie dressed as a firefighter as well. That's Steve McQueen.
But I will give you blue eyes.
Yeah.
And they both have sort of dust on their face for a lot of the film, and so it really makes their blue eyes pop.
Sure. It does. Sure. Yeah, thank you. Twinkly-eyed. Anyway, despite this nonsense and bickering, as I mentioned, The Towering Inferno was the top grossing film of 1974, was nominated for Best Picture Oscar, and Fred Astaire was nominated for an Oscar also. Mm. So it doesn't matter what I think, everybody loved it, or everybody went to see it anyway. That's all I have to say. Would you like to move on?
Sure, yeah, I'd love to move on.
Yeah, I guess the only other thing was the rumour was that they were counting lines as well.
Yes, I did read that.
Yeah, and so they had to have the same amount of lines. I don't know how true that is, but according to Paul Newman's lifelong friend A.E. Hochner, Newman called McQueen a chicken shit for counting the number of lines.
It's weird, isn't it, that Newman would say that? Because when you watch the characters on screen together, like, McQueen actually gets the more heroic stuff to do. Yeah. And it's sort of strange that, like, you're concerning yourself with counting lines and that when your character basically refers to the other character as architect for most of the movie and then gets the big payoff at the end where he's like, I'll keep eating smoke while idiots like you don't ask me how to build a skyscraper because firemen build skyscrapers, apparently.
The first half of the movie is Paul Newman's, isn't it? Basically, and the second half is Steve McQueen's.
Yeah.
You'd rather have the second half.
But in the one-upmanship battle, I think McQueen wins in terms of their characters.
I agree. A fireman's always going to win.
Yeah, sure.
All right, then. So I want to start, actually, with the decor in the glass tower because...
Oh, hello.
Oh, God, it's just gorgeous. Oh, I love it. Mm.
Why did we stop?
Why did we stop
with that decor?
What you're saying to me is, why did we stop carpeting stairs? And I agree.
Shag, pile it up.
Yeah. Have you got a corner? No, you don't. Not anymore. I've rounded that corner for you and I've covered it in orange plastic and it looks fucking lovely.
You know the bottom of the stairs? Get a water feature in there. Little indoor fountain. Beautiful.
It's just gorgeous.
It's like the inside of the houses in Boogie Nights, up a tower.
Yeah.
It's sexy. You could sit anywhere. You don't even need a chair. Just collapse onto that carpet. Hardwood floors, your fake concrete.
I went on to Zillow after I watched this and started looking at houses for sale in Los Angeles, expensive ones that have that decor. There's loads of them.
Are they? But they're unaffordable.
10 million starting out.
Give it another year of this.
That's so true. So now, right, Doug is here. Doug's the architect. I'm going to refer to him as Doug, played by Paul Newman.
Good work.
Paul Newman, thank you. Doug, the architect.
He's not a cheeseburger.
What?
When she starts kissing him, he goes, I'm not a cheeseburger.
Is that when she set up a bed for their shag? She's like...
I couldn't work it out.
Yeah. Is it a bed?
He seems surprised that there was a bed in his office.
And he built it.
Yeah, but he's taken his eye off the ball. It's established quite early
Have
on.
Have you ever worked in an office with a bed?
I've worked in an office with a sofa that we occasionally use as a bed.
Oh.
We were very young.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, this is in many ways my office, so I'm thinking of bringing a bed in here.
But no, I'm just trying to reach for a story. The answer is no. I've never worked in an office with a bed.
Have you?
Dream scenario.
They had one at IGN.
I don't know. Well, when
they were
I was
working, you guys
in bed with Chris Tilly.
Well, the thing is,
new feature.
The thing is, IGN at the time was part of MySpace as well, so it was that kind of WeWork wild sort of idiots going around on frigging tricycles. But yeah, money was being spunked up the wall, but spunk wasn't, and there were no beds.
Yoo-hoo, thanks for that, Chris.
I cannot wait for your expose on what really happened at IGN.
As I say, it was more MySpace. We were like the well-behaved geeks at the other side of the office while they were having the proper fun.
Right.
So Doug's here. Now, is Doug's here before he goes to the wilderness, question mark? Where is Doug going?
What a weird arc as well. Like, your hero, the start of his journey is, I'm moving to the countryside.
Yeah, forever, I think.
Just sort of odd. Like, yeah. I mean, it's sort of never really explored. Like, no idea why he's so bored of the city. He wants to move to the country.
A man that could be described as being at the absolute bleeding edge of urban living as well. He's like, fuck this. I'm going to go and live in a log cabin, which I suppose is to show his disdain for his own creation.
Yeah, but it doesn't work because this tower is screwed. And it's like, maybe if you'd stop looking at country piles and check the wiring once in a while, we wouldn't all be on fire.
Yeah.
I guess if you've made your life building offices in cities, though, maybe that's the idea. Did they say something about it?
Last one a good one, though. That's the thing. You want to go out with a bang, not literally.
He made it good. It was Richard Chamberlain who messed it up.
Well, here's the thing. It's like, he blames himself somewhat. And I think maybe I carried myself along with his journey of like, oh God, I should have checked this. These were my specifications. And I've just sort of like gone, I trust these businessmen.
Yeah, I think that is his, I think his arc is a bit wedged in. And I think, which I will come back to, I think the film gets a bit spoiled by having two people that both want to be the good guy. And if this counting line thing is true, it's at the expense of a story.
100% agree.
Anyway, so.
And adds an hour onto the movie.
Oh, bloody hell.
But there are some things that do seem kind of ridiculous. I mean, the faulty wiring is one thing. Let's assume Doug didn't know.
Yeah.
Doug didn't know about the faulty wiring. Everyone knows that the safety equipment has not yet been installed.
Yeah.
Someone even says, we really shouldn't be having this party tonight.
Yeah.
Don't have the party.
Because the sprinklers aren't working. It's like, well, you're probably not even allowed to have. Like, we talk about code. No one's like, fuck the code. Everyone's like, we stuck to code. So if we're sticking to code, you're probably not allowed a party right now.
Exactly.
But so, it means that they kind of share responsibility, though, don't they? There's different varieties of villain in this that bear different sort of responsibility.
But as Vicky said at the start, I don't know who the villain is.
Mm-hmm. I think it's 100,000% Richard Chamberlain, who's fucked up Paul Newman's plans, and he's lying to his father-in-law, and then he tries to get ahead of the women at the end.
That's when he grows into proper baddie, and that's awesome. But he's quite sympathetic at points because he's like, no one loves me, and you told me to do it.
Yeah,
and he's sharing the kickbacks.
He's a weakling.
The minute he becomes a villain is when he hits on Doug's girl.
Oh yeah,
that's when he's like,
he does a lot in this film.
I forgot about that. What does he say to her?
He goes, "Do you want to do lunch tomorrow?" And she's like, "No."
She says no, so she's so good. So anyway, if tonight goes well, fingers crossed, there'll be skyscrapers all over the country. But spoiler, it isn't going to go well because up on 81, some fire jumps out of a cupboard.
Yeah, I got a bit confused. This film is already too long. They have one fire in one room that they put out, but then there's a secret fire. It's like, okay, so they know about one fire, but then O.J. Simpson seems to know about the other fire, or is that the first fire? There's too many fires and one has to be established as the secret fire.
So, as you said, it's down to faulty wiring. However, I think where you've got an issue, O.J. Simpson is a security guard, agreed?
Yeah, that is an issue. Have you noticed not one, but two men in this film have potentially killed their wives in real life?
Who's the other one?
Oh, yeah.
Is it
Robert
alleged?
Robert Wagner, it's alleged. Oh. Well, it was all reopened and then it was closed again, wasn't it?
Oh, the one on the yacht.
Natalie Wood.
Well, Natalie Wood?
Yeah.
Wow.
Sure.
It's O.J. Simpson is stood in front of a control panel that ostensibly tells him when stuff is working. That control panel is flashing.
Mm.
Why would it flash? If something's working, it's on. If something's not working, it's off. Why does it flash?
It's flashing to say I'm working.
Right, yeah. I think that's a huge...
This is my work flash.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the designers are gone, I'm working. Massive waste of
everything
resources.
Everything fine. When I stop blinking, disaster.
You've got to stare at it the whole time.
I got one of those charger, what are they, are these things? Charger pad.
Yeah.
And it flashes when it's charged.
Oh, okay.
Stop flashing. I put it on at night and it starts flashing and wakes me up.
It looks like a spaceship. It looks awesome, but it looks like a spaceship.
So we are saying that Richard Chamberlain is the villain then?
Because when I go back and forth. He's called Roger.
Right, Roger.
He's a baddie, sure. But then they're like, oh, but he's not a baddie because you're meant to like Jim and Jim told him to do it.
Because when Doug goes round to his house and his wife, who doesn't love him anymore, when she says he's got the range of a timber wolf.
That's very funny.
It's that suggesting he's like he's playing the field.
Oh, 100%.
And also, why doesn't... I think that really should be her thing, because she doesn't have a lot to do. And I think if she always uses animal analogies for every situation in this, it would be brilliant. He's got the libido of a penguin.
And what does famously she, large.
The flight of a sparrow. And what the strength of a bear. The speed of a puma.
Well, no.
He's Brave Star.
What does she say of Paul Newman?
Who knows?
They say he used to wrestle grizzly bears in Montana.
Yes. Oh my God, she
see?
Does.
That's
like,
her thing.
He's like me.
It's all there. All right, we're going to go to a party after a break.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Of course, you went early.
Always goes early these days.
Is it really? Is it?
That's not too shabby. Just make that the halfway point.
Don't give me live notes.
We're in a break. We're in a break.
All right,
innocent,
so. So, anyway. The great and the good are here for this party, which is like a launch party for the skyscraper.
It's exactly what I'd be hosting if I'd been there. It's so a premiere.
It's a premiere.
I would have been on the red carpet. Yeah.
You'd be safe on the red carpet. You wouldn't be like, here's Roger with his wife who doesn't love him.
I wouldn't be. I always go to the after party, even when I haven't been invited.
Do you just burst
like, in? I hosted it and they're like, this is kind of exclusive. I'm like, That's why I'm here.
Stand aside.
Yeah. Find me the architect who designed you.
That's what he says. Great. There's a lot of that in this, isn't there? Anyway, so we've also established Harley, he's a con man. His mark is this woman called Lizalette, and Jim is the builder. So finally someone realises there's a fire and we get a casualty. And Doug goes to pieces, which I think is good because he can't be too capable.
It's because it's Will Giddings. Will, we never knew you.
Oh, yeah. Giddings is dead.
Yeah. 20 minutes from now, by the way, Giddings is dead.
Yeah.
He is he?
this.
Is that bad or good?
Yeah. We will only be killing supporting characters from this point in.
Also, you're using character names and I'm really getting confused.
Oh,
now.
I'm really sorry. It's just because it's because of my Newman McQueen issue that I had to, but I'll try and be.
Because obviously that was Fred Astaire we've just danced over.
Oh, very good. Very good. So. It doesn't matter that Doug goes to bits because you've got now seen it all before, super experienced, salt of the earth, blue collar, hot dad type I want to throw in here, Steve McQueen. Now, he's only ever really called Chief. Well, I don't think he's got an actual name.
Michael O'Halloran.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, Michael O'Halloran.
Call him Chief for this.
I'll call him Chief.
That will help.
All right, I'll say Doug.
Or Steve McQueen.
Steve McQueen.
That would help even more.
Yeah. Oh, Steve McQueen is the chief, and Paul Newman is architect.
Two of the most famous faces in film history.
Blurred together. Blurred together. I know. But I do like it that Steve McQueen turns up and he's like, shut up, this is how you deal with fire. What's in the building? And I'm like, why does he want to know? And OJ Simpson's like, why do you want to know? Like, it's just ridiculous. And he's like, because wool and silk give off cyanide when they burn.
Mm.
Is that true? I didn't check.
Do you want me to carry on listing them?
I don't know. I loved that. Yeah. I was like, oh my God, okay.
I looked it up. It's true as well.
Is it really?
It's absolutely true. And they only found out recently that just how many deaths in fires are actually caused by, I think it's hydrogen cyanide that gets released from these burnings. So
really? This
was ahead of the curve in terms of mentioning that.
And it does make me want to write a whodunit where that's how they did it.
Oh, very clever.
Just burn a bit of wool.
I just, I always like it when...
Burn a sheep. Yep.
When you get taught something that it doesn't really advance the plot. It's there for exposition for us to go, Steve McQueen knows what he's doing and he's in charge.
Yeah, ranks everyone.
The farmyard killings.
When there's a podcast, I outrank everyone.
I love that line as well. That was good. So now, Dan Bigelow, I only knew he was the PR man because have you seen the poster where it says, the girlfriend, there's something. They don't give them their name, so they've got Faye Dunaway, it just says, the girlfriend.
Right.
And
Dan Bigelow, male gigolo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
Dan Bigelow, European gigolo. Do you know who was in that?
If you have to do this.
Hey, did you just hear that?
Old story. I've done it too many times. I think this would be like 3 or 4, so I'm not doing it.
I think it's more.
You know when you said the other day in the pub, when it's our birthday, can we just do any films we want, maybe?
Yeah.
Is that because you wanted to do European Gigolo?
With Juice Bigelow, the original.
No, what's the other film? There's another one you're in.
Oh, Cannibals and Carpet Fitters.
Oh, yeah, no, we're not going to do that.
Rude. That's great. I mean,
I beat her undead. Is that one of yours?
Yeah,
maybe.
God, you've been in a lot, haven't you?
Yes.
Yeah. Well,
yes, I have.
Count up the minutes. How many minutes is that?
That doesn't matter. It's titles. You go by titles.
You do.
In many ways, I am an actor.
Okay.
More than a presenter. This is like a hobby now.
Can I continue?
Yeah.
So, Dan Bigelow, who, as you mentioned, at the top, which is a professional podcasting term, he's having a relationship with his secretary.
Which was fine back then.
Which is it? Why are they so sneaky?
Right. So this is the thing. This is why they have to die, because I can only assume there are two reasons. They haven't told anyone because he's married.
Yeah.
Or they haven't told anyone because he's her boss.
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
Do you think that?
I did, because I think if he's married, they'd just say it.
I think it's because he's married, because there is no reason for her to die so horrifically
unless he's married. It's so awful. So
I mean, bursting into flames and then falling to your death while on fire, that's a top three way to go.
And also the dawning realisation that this is how she's going to go is so awful.
It's a brilliant scene. The way they set it up, where he lies on the phone and he's like, yeah, okay, see you soon, and pretends there are people coming.
Yeah,
when
I found that that's gaslighting. Like, it really pissed me off.
Different time.
It's a really different time, to the point where he says, as you said, something like, isn't it strange that after you make love with a girl, there's no mark? And it's like, what do you want?
Yeah, he says there's no physical evidence. Incorrect.
That's so true. So true.
It depends where you put it.
Well, if you're in Exborgnine, it's the walls of your house.
No, I believe Ernie can hit the ceiling.
Yeah. He's a powerful man. He could go through to the room above.
Yeah, I will have that glass of water.
He can do it from here to eternity.
So I don't know what that's all about.
It's quite clever.
I don't know what that is.
He was in that.
I thought he was saying, when we were shagging 5 minutes ago, you were wild and now you seem very not, because it's like you're like a different person. And she's like, that's what I'm like, whatever, fine. But the point for me is...
Can I get some toilet roll?
Because it's going to... Do you know what I mean?
Let me tell you about your physical
evidence. Do you like this carpet? That's all I'm going to say.
Don't get on the carpet. It's brand new. It is brand new.
Well, that's the thing.
We haven't even opened yet.
See, on a serious note, it's just such a mother's like, there's literally not a mark on you. And all the while inside, she's like, you fucking moron. I've got my legs crossed right now. You would think that, wouldn't you?
Oh, really? Oh, don't sit down. That leather is new.
So true. It's making me hate him, idiot.
Well, I mean, if you hate him, you'll be pleased that he tries to outrun fire.
So then he's like, well, there was no one on the phone. I just told you that shit to make you feel better. Don't do that, Dan. We're in a partnership. Don't lie to me about the end of my life.
Sometimes women need protecting.
Do they?
From themselves.
But also the point is to me, they're very much in love.
She sees the fire and goes, is that bad? Can I just go out there? No, that's fire.
That's fire, yeah. And it will kill you.
Which I can outrun.
So they do. He talks about, I used to run. He says, I used to run 100 metres in 10 seconds. It's like, well, that's...
Through fire?
Was it through fire, though?
Well, was it through fire, mate? Because it's going to be different. You've got two towels. Fucking go for it.
I also think that's going to win you an Olympic medal back then. That's quite impressive.
Oh, how have you ended up in PR, Dan?
We've not shaved too much off that since then.
He's full of shit, basically.
That's so true.
He doesn't understand basic science or records.
But to me, because I wasn't understanding who was being punished, if he's married or whatever, I was like, even though I've seen it before, but I've really blocked it out. I was like, he's going to make it and then something else is going to happen. He's not just going to not make it at all. And he gets not very far. No. And obviously, he doesn't make
it. It's weird. It's like a short film, their story, in the middle of this larger story.
Yeah. And also the why it's so good, because it's shorter.
But also, the film would be not that much different if it was entirely excised.
Mm. Yeah.
It's true. Also, they didn't build skyscrapers with very strong glass back then, because she basically just leans on a window and goes... Yeah.
So she's gone, and I do... Oh, you know, it's so, so upsetting. It's brilliant, but it's very upsetting.
Shouldn't have secret sex in a disaster movie.
No. So then, where is Doug? Where is Paul Newman at this moment? He's with Liz Alette and her neighbour's kids. This is a question for me. Where is their mum? What happened to their mum?
She already got taken down. She was the deaf lady from earlier.
Yeah, but why she left it?
She was kind of out of it. She's on a stretcher when you see her next. She wasn't doing a U. She was like, I can't carry two kids, so I'll probably make a run.
But to the point of that, is there anyone else in here? No, I don't think so. Don't let it slow you down. That's what I'm saying. So then we've got this set piece and it's mangled stairs. All fine. We do set up the C4, which is really clever, I think. And then they blow open a fire escape. Roger tries to leg it, the fool. Although he comes back to say what we would all be thinking, which is, I'm just going to get quietly drunk over here.
Yeah.
Can you give me a bit of space?
He's all of us in this scene.
Yeah.
It's amazing how many people stop for a drink in the middle of this inferno.
But they're in a bar.
Yeah, Doug stops for a drink as well.
He does, doesn't he?
They stop for a drink later. It's like, do you drink? Do you want a drink? Are you still serving? Fantastic.
At what point does Dutch courage become just getting hammered?
It's such a good question, Chris.
I'll have a...
And let's find out this afternoon after the podcast.
I'll have a cocktail. That might take a while. I am. Is it a problem? You're in a rush or something? Make me a fucking cocktail. Yeah. OJ.
No, I think you've got to order a drink that's going to be quicker to make than a cocktail.
Sure.
Give me that bottle.
It depends on the cocktail, doesn't it? Nothing, just a pouring cocktail, nothing shaking. It just takes too much time. Negroni, there you go.
Yep.
Easy done.
A nice Negroni, I love it.
30 seconds,
that's all it takes.
So now, Liz Alette is reunited with Harley, Fred Astaire. She now knows, this is so 70s, he was trying to scam her. Right, it's not the fact that she's fine with it, whatever. He gets his... Why is he the sympathetic character? He's like, oh, shoot, I can't do anything right. And I meant to go, God bless you, Harley. What a shame for you who was trying to scam this nice lady who's just saved two kids out of all her money. Now, the fact that she loves it is a character thing, whatever. But the camera is on him. It's like, this is your story right now,
I can't
Harley.
Even scam anyone very well.
I can't do this right.
But also, you poor little lamb, you failed to scam her.
Yeah. Oh.
But also, just after he admits that he's a con artist.
Yeah.
But loves her.
Yeah.
she dies. Yeah. So the lesson for him is don't ever be honest. Go back to your conning ways. As soon as you're honest with a woman, she fucking dies.
Yeah, it's really difficult for me to swallow because we're meant to feel... He is very good in it, Fred Astaire, but we're meant to go at the end, oh, poor you. You were finally honest with a woman who you just met and she's been torn out of your arms and you'll never be happy again. You're a con man. You're a bad man. Mm. And now you've got a cat. But I don't know.
The two are connected, though, so I should not be honest and they live.
I think so.
That's what I'm saying.
Jim and Doug, that's William Holden and Paul Newman.
Thank you.
Have a chat about cold. The building is within regs. Okay, cool. So I think at this point they tried to introduce some Doug guilt, which you picked up on and I didn't. I was like, I don't understand the guilt. You all stuck to cold.
It's mad because what they're saying is the building was built within the builder's code. And then Doug goes, yeah, but I told you that wasn't good enough for this building. So what that means is Doug has designed a building that falls outside the builder's code, which surely shouldn't exist.
Exactly.
It's like you built a death tower.
Yeah, you did.
It's like you can sit there and go, I did say builder's code wasn't enough. It's like, we'll build it in the builder's code then, and then everyone's fine.
I'd love it if the first time we saw a shot of the building after this, you'd see that it was just on a complete angle that couldn't exist. Just outside the builder's code.
I think it's because they don't want to be... Neither of them want to be the baddie. So no one's going, well, I saw the code and I ignored it, God damn you. Mm. You know, it's all in there, which is Jim took kickbacks and so did Roger. But the kickbacks still kept them within code. Yep. I just didn't get on with it. So the choppers are here. Now, before the choppers...
Stupid bloody women.
I know.
Don't run at a helicopter because the pilots will sacrifice themselves rather than kill you.
Yeah. But women do, I've seen it happen. Mm. There's a helicopter in the vicinity. Women just run at it. Yep. I've seen so many people die that way.
I once lost a female friend when a helicopter flew overhead. She was chasing it for 2 miles before I caught her. I was like, leave it, let it go. She's like, helicopter!
This is a very me thing to focus on. Because it's the 70s, especially Faye Dunaway, especially, her dress is diaphanous, right? She is braless. Fine, it was the time. There's a helicopter, and you'd be like, oh, I really want to run at it because I have to, because I'm a woman. That is going to blow my frock off. What do I do? What can I do? So...
I see a helicopter. I just want to run it.
I have to run it, everyone has to die. So I think it's a bit of a cheat because previously they're like, the helicopter can't land. They're like, oh, I've just had a phone call. Definitely can. You're like, someone's going to die because it can't. You just said it can't. But I did like the fact, I thought it was quite a fun choice that you could drag that out. I mean, this is a 3-hour film anyway. Like, it's going to land. It can't. It just immediately arrives and it explodes. Mm. Done. So that's good. Right. So then Paul Newman... Mm-hmm. Rigs things so that this lift, this outside lift, modelled on the San Francisco Regency Hyatt, I believe.
Stayed there, been in that lift.
If he really? Yes. Was he scary?
It is quite scary.
Has he got a glass floor?
No.
Okay, cool.
It doesn't have a glass floor. It's quite an old-fashioned glass lift. It's a lot like the one in this movie.
It's quite Art Deco, isn't it? So anyway, he's like, yeah, we can get the women and children out of here. We can get all the women out of here in this one lift.
Question. So I get that this was the times. Now we've got a better sense of equality.
Yeah.
Do the women go first or do we share it?
I wonder. I've been on a cruise
Great
ship.
Question,
no,
by
it's
the way.
A good question. I've been on a cruise ship and they said, this is a few years ago, when we do the lifeboats, we do women and children first. And I was a bit surprised.
Were you angry? I'll go last. I will go last.
Were you the one asking the question? Oi! Over here. So, these lifeboats, is it women and children first?
I'm hoping you're going to say
it. It is.
Yeah,
I don't know how I feel.
I don't know how I feel about it.
When does a child become an adult officially?
Yeah, it's a good
question. Because that kid's tall.
Yeah.
Is that an adult?
A boy child. It's very.
Also, I think
I'm short. Do I count as a child?
A 16-year-old who hasn't smoked their entire life. Yeah. It's got a better chance of surviving in the sea than me. So I should probably. I think you need to provide a medical history and go, look, I need to.
If there's time, I suppose you really should. Hmm. Yeah. You should earn your place to get out there first. I mean,
I'll just put 7 cigarettes in my mouth at once and go, look at me. Look, I'm going to die.
I just think as well, it's the time of the film. They want all the men in one room to do some hero shit.
No,
there's no hero shit for the women to do. The women just have to stand in a lift and scream for a bit. So the lift goes down and it detaches, which is, I think, it's, oh, this is on Paul Newman, quite frankly. Like, it sounds like a bad idea anyway. My favourite bit, it detaches. There's a woman in a green dress and she bashes against the glass. So she's the one that bashes the glass panel out. Someone pulls her up. No, you're fine. And then poor Lisa Lett, who's all she's done is try to save children. Mm. She then must fall to her death. And it wasn't even her back that bashed the glass out. So cruel.
Her death is a really weird one in this movie because, you know, every movie operates on its own logic. And the logic of her dying, you know, I can understand why Bigelow and his secretary cark it. But yeah, her, it's sort of like
she's... No, I don't think people in these disaster films, though, not everyone gets killed for a reason.
Mm. Well, it's to make you think they'll kill the two leads because she's done nothing wrong. So it is. It is very cruel.
I feel sorry for that waitress. Faye Dunaway tries to give her spot on the lift to the waitress.
And
Paul Newman,
like, no.
Paul Newman comes up and says, "No, that's yours." That waitress for a second thought she was saved, and then our hero sacks her off.
It's so true.
But good guy O.J. Simpson, literally saves a cat.
He literally saves a cat.
Literally saves the cat.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, he can't be a bad guy.
No,
he has got a nice face.
He's got such a warm face, and he saves a cat in this realistic movie.
Yeah, he doesn't really have much else to do, does he?
He was just starting out.
So the chairlift thing arrives, and then there is another woman, actually, because she's the first person on the chairlift, isn't she? And she's like, "I can't." I'd be like, "Cool, don't then. I will."
Yep. is this the breeches boy?
This is the breeches boy.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's a hell of a concept, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm going to stick you on a chair on a bit of string and chuck you out the window. I mean, but it means we get a great moment with Richard Chamberlain where he, you know...
Oh, I love it. He ain't having it. Absolutely brilliant.
I guess it's kind of Billy Zane on Titanic, isn't it? Which is based sort of vaguely in reality. So this is kind of a true thing that people would do this in this situation. Yeah. But it works wonderfully well for his character.
It totally then cements him. Unfortunately, a little bit too late. It's like, oh, you're the bad guy. Because who does that? And he does kick a man.
No, I think I knew at the start when he said he was the bad guy. Mm.
So then you've got this woman in the chairlift.
What he's wearing when he walks in at the start. And that's like sports jacket. And he's all like,
drink.
Really? You want to talk to me about it? I don't need to listen to you.
And also, I've never lived in a house large enough to put a bar in. And if I did, his bar is horrible. Mm. Like, try harder.
I'm very rarely here. I've got the range of a timber wolf. Let someone else say it. It's better coming from someone else.
So, the fire chief saves the lift people. He lashes into the chopper.
He holds a man off the side of the elevator.
Yeah, for a long time.
I don't think it's physically possible what he's doing, but it's very impressive.
But he does it because he can't. That's the thing, because he's the good guy. He can't drop anyone. Like, I knew that that firefighter isn't going to die because your dual hero's got hold of you. And I don't think either of the characters want to be responsible for letting someone die
But when you're watching it, could you not have thought, well, they can kill one of them because we've got two for the price of one in this film?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, if you're not aware of what's going on behind the scenes with the contract negotiations, which not everyone would be.
Very good point. You wouldn't have known that, I guess, going
no.
in. Unless you saw the poster and went, what the fuck is that?
You just think they've made a mistake.
It looks like I'm not a graphic designer.
The good graphic designer was sick that day.
And Vicky's done it. And that's why it looks like that.
Did it need to be in crayon?
So anyway, the point being now, time is running out.
Ticking clock.
Thank God.
15 minutes.
There's 15 minutes. The fire is wild and there's a new plan. We're going to explode the tanks. Now, this is sold in to Steve McQueen as a suicide mission.
Mm, by
and
Dabney
it
Coleman.
Is absolutely not a suicide mission. I love it. He's a very fine actor and he's like, how do I get back? And they're like, you don't. And he's like, well, oh heck, or whatever he says. It's like, awesome. He gets in the room. You're like, you got bags of time. I thought they were going to say, we've run out of timers, unfortunately, Steve. So got a ton of C4, but it's going to blow your face off. Is that all right? Yeah. The minute he gets up there with Paul Newman, he's like, this is the timer. Oh, well, you're fine then, aren't you? Like, it's, I don't know.
Do you both need to be here?
I mean, contractually, I have to be here right now.
So this is where we'll get into like me being like, oh, the two of them have kind of wrecked the thing. So Steve McQueen rings Paul Newman to say this is the plan. And Doug, for some reason, I don't think a normal person would ask this question, but who will bring these explosives? Why do you give a shit? Like, it doesn't matter. But it's so he can go, there'll be some dumb son of a bitch to bring it up. Awesome, right? Two extremely talented, exceptional actors Do you wish there'd been a bit more back and forth between these two so that he goes, oh, God, you've got to die to save me. That's awful. You're only in this position because of me. Like, that moment is so flat and the dialogue is there to make you go, you've been brought to this point by each other, whatever, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Like you say, fucking Roger. So then Newman and McQueen are working together to set the explosives. There is absolutely zero tension and zero chemistry. They hardly look at each other. Do you not think?
Yeah, honestly, by this point, I was just like, when does this end?
Yeah, it's a weird act three, isn't it? Like, it doesn't belong to either of them. That's the problem, I think. Anyway, eventually it works. Although a lot of people get exploded and crushed and washed away. So,
I mean, the real problem I have is Carlos's pointless death.
Is he the barman?
He's the barman.
Yeah. And he's holding the 29. And then Jim's like, don't hold glass.
He's a really decent bloke. Yeah. And he gets hit by a falling statue.
Yeah, he gets crushed.
And it's just like, what? Carlos didn't deserve that.
He did not. He did not.
But I guess that's what I'm saying. You know, some people get it that don't deserve it. But yep.
And then the trouble is, because I've just seen Poseidon Adventure, I was like, one of you has got to die. Like, one of you does. And neither of them do. And then Harley gets the cat of the woman he conned. And he's really sad about that. It's a weird love story. I don't really agree with it. But I think the cat button, if you will, is effective.
It's just a lot for one date where she's interrupted by a towering inferno. His arc is like, really? Like, one date?
Well, learning your date is a con man is big enough for one date. But then having a towering inferno and then dying and saving some children before you die, it's a lot. Yeah. It's a lot to pack in.
So here we go. So,
here's a cat.
So the chief and the architect on the steps, they sum up the morality, the beating heart, the raison d'etre of this film, which is, I believe, fire chiefs are not consulted during the planning stages of large-scale construction projects, but then what are building regs and code? And aren't they co-designed in a cross-state, multidisciplinary working group that also involves the fire service? Is that not how states work?
I mean, it doesn't sound as cool as, I'm going to keep eating smoke until someone asks us how to build them. Eating smoke.
Yeah.
I believe that architects were not happy with this film.
Right. But the thing is, they've got all the credits from being in rom-coms all the time, so they can't mold.
Firefighters loved it.
But equally, I saw someone else who worked on this film saying that after the release of this movie, sprinkler systems were brought into high-rises that hadn't been there before.
Yeah, yeah. I can't imagine the impact of it when, you know, there is a shot of the building and the skyline is comparatively clear to what we would be comfortable with, accustomed to today. And it is shocking to see a city centre with so few high rises because we're just so accustomed to it.
Mm.
But
we weren't that accustomed to it when we were little kids. It's much more normal here now, isn't it?
Yeah.
A lot's happened in the last 40 odd years.
I did read
Canary Wharf wasn't even a thing when I was a kid.
That's so true.
Easy, Bob Hoskins.
Yeah, I love that video.
and the film.
This person who worked on the film that said that sprinkler systems were put in.
Yes.
Wasn't that Steve McQueen? He still hadn't broken character.
No. No, this was a more recent documentary. And Steve McQueen is very much dead.
How's Paul Newman doing?
Paul Newman's dead as well.
Is he?
I don't know.
Again.
I don't know who we're meant to be doing. It sounds a little bit like Captain Jack Sparrow. Steve McQueen is very dead.
That's the end of the film.
Right.
Right.
Do you think they should have left it up as a shrine to all the bullshit in the world?
What does that mean?
I don't know, but I like it. It sounds like a good line.
I get it.
That's why we haven't taken down some of our old episodes. We've left them up as a shrine to all the bullshit in the world.
What was a particularly bad one? I'm trying to think. First 6 months.
Yeah. Maybe Free Jack versus Labyrinth.
It's okay.
No, it's just a bad pair, but good
chat. Great chat.
Great bands.
Yeah. Did you see that they played as a double feature? This played as a double feature with Earthquake because they came out like 2 months apart.
Right.
And when they played them as a double bill, they called them the Shake and Bake double feature.
Jesus.
That's great.
That's awesome. Yep.
And it's also a good line from Aliens where they call them a Shake and Bake colony.
Yes, they do.
Mm. And also, I was saying Paul Newman wasn't happy about making this film. There's a great recent four-part documentary about Paul Newman where they go into the fact that
he's... Is he in it?
He's dead. He's very much dead. Good. But he was just very unhappy with this period of his career. And this is a quote that he says about this film. He said, "For the first time, I fell for the goddamn numbers. I did this turkey for $1 million and 10% of the gross, but it's the first and last time, I swear." And he did make a concerted effort after this to stop making shite.
All right, let's do the bits then, shall we?
Yeah.
So, Chris, what would you say is your best scene?
When the villain of the film, Richard Chamberlain, makes a run for it, kicks other people off that chair and falls to his death. Yeah. I friggin' love it.
Yeah. What about you?
I don't think we've given her a name for this entire episode.
I don't know her name.
It's even more offensive because I don't think it's mentioned in the film, because I remember listening going, I should give her a name because we know Dan Bigelow.
Yeah.
But it's when the secretary bursts into flames before smashing through a window and falling to
Laurie.
Her death.
Laurie.
Oh,
yeah,
you,
yeah.
Chris.
Okay, good.
Yeah. The actress who plays her has a very interesting life story. I recommend reading it.
Oh, okay.
I fell down a rabbit hole there.
Oh, okay. Mm.
She fell out of a high rise.
It's Bigelow and his lover's dad, but his lover.
Oh, my God.
I know, I didn't do it.
Even
either.
You.
I didn't do it. Do you know the reason I felt justified? Because the pollster wouldn't have done it either. She would have just been the secretary.
Death, but it's great, isn't it?
Yeah, it really haunted me as a child. And then I did go into this thinking, oh, you know what it's like when you're little, you build things up. And it's really, really impressive. Mm. The stunt work's amazing, and it's just so scary, and it's so sad and cruel. It's great. What's your MVW, Alex?
Well, remind me who plays the architect.
I say Paul Newman.
Okay, Paul Newman. So it's Steve McQueen. I think he wins the battle of the egos, or whatever it is, or whichever agent won. I just think he, like, as I said at the very start, I do think there's a weird lack of explanation as to the architect, Paul Newman's responsibility in this whole thing, which leaves a little bit of a sort of question mark over whether he should be in trouble for building a skyscraper that exceeds building regulation codes, whereas Steve McQueen gets the fun lines and gets to go, "I'll keep eating smoke until dickheads like you get out my fucking face," or whatever he says at the end. So Steve McQueen, he's just so goddamn cool in this movie.
Mine is Richard Chamberlain as Roger, because I want a proper baddie. Like, Newman and McQueen cancel each other out, so I just want to... I like, everybody likes a good villain, and Roger finally becomes a proper villain when he kicks people off that chairlift.
Any wool manufacturers? Any silk manufacturers? Because they really cyanide, you fucking idiots.
He needs one more thing as well, because that isn't enough for O.J. Simpson, and there's one... Oh, I can't remember what it is.
Any cats, because they run around.
Apart from this
fire,
one, which stays on a chair the whole time, even though everything's on fire.
So warm.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, I disagree with Alex and agree with Vicky. I do think these two men cancel each other out.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any point in picking one of them. No. So my winner is Mr. Richard Chamberlain.
Yeah.
As well. I think he makes a really good, slimy, sleazy villain. And he does. I mean, I think he's a villain from the beginning. I think it sets him up as that. But I 100% agree. He gets progressively worse as the film goes on. And he gets the comeuppance he deserves. So it's very satisfying.
And what would you change, Chris?
Yeah, this is strange that I wrote this down, really, based on what you two have said.
Cool.
I mentioned this before. I would cut out the whole Robert Wagner storyline.
The best bit!
For a film that's too long, I think you can excise that, and it doesn't really make any difference to the movie. But I guess it didn't hit me as hard as you guys did. It did you guys. And the way you describe it, I'm like, oh, yeah, that is pretty harsh, isn't it? But, all right, so when Newman and McQueen are burning up, let's have them stripped to the waist, as I said.
Perfect.
On Monday.
Oh. Yeah, that's only fair. Oof. Yeah.
Hoochie mama.
Lucky old Faye Dunaway, as previously mentioned.
Wow, we melt city.
Don't do that.
She wasn't very lucky on this set, though. Did you see here? That story was repeated.
I read about William
frequently.
Holden. Like,
yeah, hit her.
Yeah. Fuck, like that.
William Holden.
Bill Holden slapped her, apparently. She was late every day. She was working. She was holding the set up. She was very unprofessional. And one day he slapped her, and apparently she wasn't late again. Lovely, yeah. Lovely
you know
times.
What? I read something about
and
that.
I read that a few places, so I feel like that's probably
true. I read something.
I'll tell you who's not going to be late ever again.
But it's so awful, that story, because you read that, you're like, oh, you got a beating, so you weren't late. And it's like, well done, Bill, because you sorted that problem. And then what did they work on together after this? There was something else they did together. And so I read this stuff going, it can't have been that bad because they worked together again. It's like, that's so typical that you miss the fact that you just go, well, you wouldn't, oh, I don't know. It's not that it wasn't that bad. That happened. It was bad. And I might be able to work with him again. It doesn't mean that that thing wasn't bad.
I'd definitely be on time, though.
I don't know.
I read it a slap somewhere. Elsewhere, I read it as a shove and a threat.
Yeah.
Lovely stuff.
Well, that's not nice.
No, did you do your change?
I didn't do my change. I think I've got a weird one as well. You kill Philip.
Who's
Philip? Is the little bratty kid who's like got his headphones on for the whole start of the movie. And
all
I'm
right,
like, that's
yeah.
just rude. Adults are talking to you and you've got your headphones on. But he's just a little bit too cocky when he's like, I think I can clam down this banister. And I'm just like, you really want to shock me? You really want to surprise me? Kill him.
Drop
I know he
yeah.
can't because the architect's played by...
Paul Newman.
Paul Newman is there, so no one can die in his presence. But I'm
how?
Still... I think he should fall. I think he should slip and fall down that shaft, the stairwell, to his death.
And let's give him a sort of Hans Gruber shot as well of him.
Yeah. 100%. I just think you've shown us this massive drop down the centre of this skyscraper, 100-plus floors. I want to see someone go down. And obviously you're killing Lizalette later on,
yeah.
so it's got to be Philip. Kill Philip.
Mine is really obvious. It's just don't do it like this. The architect just needs to be bad. He ignored the code. He cut the corners. He did it to get the kickbacks. He's not this like twinkly eyed dude that's going to retire to the cabin in the woods kind of thing. The fire chief is an honest working class man sent in to clean up the mess. That's it.
Yeah, and you're exactly right. There's one too many heroes and there's two too many villains.
Yeah.
Collapse the characters.
Oh, yes. Always. There we go. We're done.
All right, then. Well, you know what time it is, Vicky. It's time for the verdict.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
Right then. My movies this week. Well, Craig's movies, but I was, I guess, hosting the pair. I don't know how you describe it.
Craig's movies this week.
Craig's movies this week. Okay, so let's go with you, Victoria.
I'll just say it straight away. It's... The winner is, for me, The Poseidon Adventure. Because there are two heroes in the Towering Inferno, so Act 3 becomes very scattershot. Whose story is most important? I think in trying to please both men, they've honoured neither role. We want these two titans.
Both people.
Both, sure.
Yep.
I don't see that the women got to do this bullshit, so that's why I said that. You want these two great luminaries to be in opposition and like pushing and pulling and arguing, and they end up in set pieces that are like, you said to do this and it didn't work. I said to do this and I was right. You could even fuck it all and just chuck Susan in the middle of all that in a kind of love triangle thing, whatever.
Sexy.
Yeah. Or she's not about to leave. When we open the film, she's like, the thing is, Doug, I've been offered a new job, so probably this is it.
I can't remember. I know we finished the movie. What happens at the end? Does she say, I'm going to stay with you? Or is that never gets resolved, does
it? Before they're sat on the steps, she says, I'd follow you anywhere. And he says, okay, let's talk about it tomorrow, which is a nice line because it's like, I'm not going to die because we're going to talk about it tomorrow. So she's basically saying, I don't want this great job.
It's also like, really? Now? Pick a moment.
Not now, love. Yeah, all of that. What you want to do is then she's not going to leave Doug. She loves Doug. But then during the way he acts in this rescue, when he's kind of in this like, you know, bro thing with Steve McQueen, it makes her rethink. And then he does this like character slingshot. He's a bad person. And at the end, he does something heroic to save the chief, who is a good person, whose life is only in danger because of Doug cutting goddamn corners. And we don't have that. And so because we don't have that, there is a building on fire for 3 hours, which just doesn't compare with the Poseidon Adventure.
Okay.
That's my reasoning.
The Poseidon Adventure gets one vote. Chris Tilley.
I'm going to read exactly what I have written down.
Good. All right. I did.
Just wait. Close one for me this week. I wish Towering Inferno wasn't so long, but the fact that it has stars I prefer, as well as a decent villain who has a dramatic death, makes it the better film for me.
Wow.
But listening to you guys talk about these films this week... I've changed my mind.
Holy mackerel.
I'm going to vote for Poseidon Adventure.
Yeah.
Just talking about it, I'm thinking, no, this is a better film. And actually, it hit me harder. The drama, the emotion of it really got to me in a way that I hadn't really thought about until you guys were discussing it.
Aww.
And the stuff you've called out Towering Inferno for, I think you're correct on. So forget what's written there.
Wow.
Forget it. Delete.
Forget that.
Delete.
Forget that.
It's Poseidon Adventure.
All right. We have a winner.
Lovely.
And it is the Poseidon Adventure. For the record, I was voting for the Poseidon Adventure. It's just a better film. And also the sea, I'm not saying fire isn't dangerous, but the sea just scares the shit out of me. It always has. And so being upturned on a boat is a much more terrifying scenario. It scared me more as a kid. Scared me more this time. So it is the Poseidon Adventure. It's a 3-for-3-er.
Wow.
You know who's going to be happy about that?
Craig. Yeah.
Craig Mayne. That's fantastic. Craig,
well,
your favourite film of all time
yeah.
just won. I hope you're happy.
Right then, let's look ahead to next week's Fanuary pairing. The clue.
Here we are again.
Oh dear.
Oh dear.
Clue that,
how long shall I leave the first clue up before I put the second clue so we can get some guesses in?
I think you are underestimating
our audience. All right, well, how long do you think I should leave it up before I post the second clue?
I don't know what you normally do, so I just do what you normally do.
I'm not aware of this side of the podcast entirely.
Do the clue again, although everyone will have heard it.
Now, let me welcome everybody to the Wild Wild West. Mm-hmm.
So what are the films?
The films are, because the next line of that song is a state that's untouchable, like Elliot Ness.
And Elliot Ness is in both of these films?
Kind of, yeah. The films are The Untouchables, which is available on Amazon, Apple and Sky, and Road to Perdition, which is on Disney and Amazon. Unusually, actually, but there you go.
What a surprise.
What a distribution surprise.
What a weird one. So, Road to Perdition, though. I can't remember Elliot Ness.
Yeah,
me neither, but he must be in it.
No.
She just said he's in it.
Yeah. Based on a graphic novel, and Elliot Ness is in that.
So do have read the graphic novel and before you guess.
Don't watch the movie either. So next week we're doing The Untouchables versus the graphic novel
of Road to Perdition.
That's right.
Okay.
It's a first.
Fantastic. That is our next Fanuary pairing. Fanuary part 4, The Untouchables versus Road to Perdition. In the meantime, please do subscribe to us if you haven't done already. We're on Apple Podcasts, all the other podcast networks, whichever you choose, and get in touch with us if you so wish. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram and TikTok, where we are at ClashPod. Back next week as Fanuary continues. Have a lovely, lovely weekend. Bye-bye.
Clash of the Titles is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.